I'm Angela Garbarino. I am interviewing Ed Smalley for the Undergraduate Oral History Research Project for Nevada State College. Tell me a little bit about where you were born and raised and what your parents did for a living.
Well, I was born at the old Las Vegas Hospital on 8th and Ogden in Las Vegas. We moved to Henderson when I was 4 months old. So that would be March of 1950. My dad was a school teacher, and my mom, she was a stay-at-home until my youngest sister started school. Then she became a nurse. She worked at Rose de Lima originally, and then she got on with the Clark County School District and became a school nurse, and she was a school nurse for... I'm still running into people who worked with her over the years.
Tell me about your education.
Well, you know, I went kindergarten through 12th grade here in Henderson, and then I went in the Navy, and then after I got out of the Navy, I went to college in Oregon. I got my bachelor's degree in 1975. I had a double major, English and Social Studies. It took me 5 years. I didn't have draft pressure, and I was getting the GI Bill, and I was enjoying it. After college, I got a job in Salem. I was living in Oregon. I married my college sweetheart and got a job in Salem. I worked for the state for 2 years, and I decided that wasn't going to be the job for me. So I went and went back to college and got the rest of the credits I needed to become secondary certified. And then I substituted, and then just about the time school started in the fall of 79, I got a job. And I taught for 11 years at Seven Oak Middle School in Lebanon, Oregon. And both my boys were born there. And then my wife ran off, and then things got really ridiculous. And then an opportunity opened up in Laughlin down in 91. They opened up the brand new high school, and I got on the staff there. And after 3 years, I came to town here to, because Laughlin was kind of a ways away, and my dad was starting to be in fading health. And so I came up here to help with dad, because I got a job out at Von Tobel. There was a principal there that I really liked. And so I worked for him, and then he got a job at Rancho. He got the principal's job at Rancho, and he took a bunch of us with him, and I stayed there for 15 years until I retired. Okay, did that answer your question?
One of them. What were your home in the neighborhood like?
Well, you know, the old town site houses.
The Victory Village.
No, not Victory Village. Victory Village was across the highway.
Oh, okay.
Town site, there's those wooden houses, and there's still some out there. There are basically three types of town site houses. Now, I could be wrong. There could be another type. But, you know, wandering through these neighborhoods all my life, really, there was the two-bedroom side entrance. You had a two-bedroom house, and you'd come into the carport and go in on the side. Then there was a two-bedroom with the front entrance, and the carport was on the side. Then there was the three-bedroom, which was a side entrance. And I think there was even a three-bedroom front entrance. I could be wrong, but I think that's kind of the houses I remember. And I can tell you some of the people who lived in some of them over the years. But there are still some of them still out there. I was just driving through the neighborhood today.
Okay.
And my neighborhood, but some of the other neighborhoods, it's all one neighborhood now. But that was the town. And Wyoming Street, we had, you know, the states there. We had, Atlantic and Pacific. Texas Avenue comes through to the highway. And then Atlantic goes one way. Atlantic goes south. Pacific goes north. And then they cross again. You're the corner of Atlantic and Pacific out there on, as it goes towards what is now Burkholder Middle School.
Oh, right.
That's where the high school was. But before that, the high school was down in the city center. Are you familiar? Where the city hall? That's where all the schools were.
Is that the downtown Henderson on Water Street?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right down there. That's where I went to kindergarten through third grade. And then I went 6th grade through 8th grade there. 4th grade and 5th grade, I went up to what's now Gordon Macaw. It was called Basic Elementary at the time.
Oh, funny.
And I remember when that was built. And I remember Mom and Dad driving by it on that old dirt road up above town. Of course, now it's swallowed up by town, but drove right by it and said, that's the new Basic Elementary. Well, the second year I was there, the guy who came to be principal was Gordon Macaw. And so now it's Macaw Elementary, from what I understand. So,
can you tell me about who your neighbors were?
Okay, now this is an interesting story, you know, the Henderson and their cultural diversity. Now, years later, I started to find out more about these families, but in Las Vegas, New Mexico, there are a group of people who are of Hispanic heritage. It would be wrong to call them Mexican because they were there in the Rio Abajo Valley,
okay,
around Las Vegas, New Mexico, before the United States was the United States. But there's several families there, and they came to our valley, and a lot of them settled in Henderson. Right across the street from us was a family named Ortiz, and there were seven of them eventually. When they came, there was Mark was my age. He's still around. I go see him once in a while. Connie, well, Mark was a year older than me. Connie was my age. Dolores was my younger sister's age. And then there was Helen. Dolores and Helen are gone now. And then Vicky was born not long after they were over there. I saw something on the You Know You're From Henderson site about her, born at Rose de Lima, and I typed in with, yeah, I remember, I was over at your house when you came home from the hospital. And then there was Betty, who was in my youngest sister's class. And then there was one after that called Patricia, and she was born when I was in sixth grade. But we knew the Ortiz, I mean, the families were in and out of each other's houses all the time. We grew up together. We know each other. And then next door, a family, the Jaramillos. Okay. I think if any of them heard me use that word Jaramillo, they would be impressed because they were the Jaramillos. Aurora and Jekka Jaramillo lived next to us. Jaramillo. Okay, to be mm-hmm. truthful. And they had their grandson, Joe, living with them. Now, Joe's parents and the rest of the family lived in Victory Village. And a lot of the Hispanic families lived in Victory Village at the time. And I knew all the Hispanic people. There's one of those guys that lives up in Oregon now. And I see him every now and then when I'm up there. I get a hold of him. Duke Leroy Sanchez. But I grew up with these guys. The guy that lived next door, Joe, Little Joe is the name he came. I mean, you can't find anybody my age who grew up in this town who doesn't know who Little Joe was. He passed away in 2000. He was only 50 years old, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness.
You know, when you know somebody that well, and then you watch them all start to die away, that's when you start to, you know, looking over your shoulder saying, who's next? But, you know, I can name some of these people, and they're gone. Well, I named you two of the seven Ortiz children that are no longer with us. Mm-hmm. And then sort of kept right next to the Ortizes, there's a group that moved in. The guy I knew was Eddie Alaris, but Leo Montoya was his younger brother, and Dickie Montoya. Dickie Montoya owns a flower shop up at the end of Water Street here.
Okay.
But Leo and Eddie both since are no longer with us. And then there are several girls. They lived there for maybe a year. But when they left, a family called the Crespins moved in there. And I knew them. There was Victor, although Victor was a Jaramillo. I didn't know that till years later. And then there was Nita, Mena, Ollie, and JoJo. And then there's a Jim Sanchez and a, well, we called him Jim, but his name was Santiago, and a Michael. Out of those, only one of them still alive.
Oh my goodness.
That's, you know, it's kind of sad. As a matter of fact, Pete, the younger brother there, he went in the Army, and he served in the Army with a good friend of mine who's grew up on Arizona Way, a guy named Dave Wheat. Now, the Wheats moved here when I was in second grade, and Dave was in second grade, and I knew him from Cub Scouts, and I knew who he was. There's a family on that street, the Alzebrooks. They came here out of Colorado in, I got to say, 53 or 54. It's one of those families I don't ever remember not knowing. But they bought a house in 1955 on Arizona Way. And as a matter of fact, I passed by it a little earlier today and looked at it. But the Wheats moved in one house over from them. Are you familiar with the ways over there? There's Arizona Way, New Mexico Way, Montana Way, Colorado Way, Idaho Way. Then on the other side, on the Victory Road side of it, you know, this is, they come off of Atlantic. Then on the other side, there's Nevada Way. The Walgreens is
right there.
See, Victory Road comes into Lake Mead. I can remember in the day when they called that the Frontier Highway. So I remember that. But anyway, there was Nevada Way, California Way. A guy I grew up with named Dick Dwingett lived on California Way. I saw him up in Montana 2 or 3 years ago. He served as the undersheriff of Metro for 28 years or something. Well, he served on Metro for 28 years, but he retired as the undersheriff to Jerry Keller. And then there's Utah Way and Oregon Way and Washington Way, and I might be leaving one out. They were all there, and they're all little cul-de-sacs. They still are, by the way. So I knew a lot of the families over there. But the Wheat brothers, well, there are five of them. They were from Montana, and they moved down here. And Dave Wheat and I started running around when we were sixth grade or something like that. We still see each other all the time. He lives in Idaho.
What part?
You know where Pocatello is?
I'm familiar with Nampa.
Nampa's over in the western part. Pocatello's kind of out in the southeastern corner. And he went to Idaho State. Now, if I'm giving this interview, I want to put my little commercial in here. One thing Nevada needs to do is do more to give post-secondary education in this state. I mean, you're lucky you got another college.
Yes.
When I graduated from high school, there was the University of Nevada. That was fairly well established. And then down here we had what was then called Nevada Southern. Just about a dozen buildings out there on that lot. That, of course, eventually became UNLV. Now, it was a big vacant, empty spot, and these things would grow. The tumbleweeds would grow and then get blown away. And so we gave it the scornful nickname of Tumbleweed Tech. There's some people from my age group that would probably remember that nickname. And that's all there was. You go to Tumbleweed Tech or Reno. That's why I wound up in Oregon. Now, Dave's brother, Mike Wheat, he was about 3 years older than me and Dave. He graduated from basic. He worked at the plant for a couple of years, and then he went in the Marines and served in Vietnam. And then, of course, you know, at that time when we got out of the service, we had the GI Bill paying us to go to school. Well, not paying us to go to school, but helping subsidize our education. Yes. And Mike went to Montana State there in Bozeman. His parents, of course, moved away to Arizona, Montana, too. But Dave got out of the Army, and he went to school up there. And Dave came back a couple of summers and worked at the pool, the old pool, not the one that was there now. That's the Red Bricks, if you'll allow me to get into that in a few minutes.
Of course.
But, excuse me. Anyway, While Dave was home in the summer working at the pool, another Henderson girl, Pandora Schmidt, who's going to school at Idaho State, was working there, and they got together and they got married, and Dave went to school in Idaho, Idaho State. That's where he graduated from. Okay, now, Mike Wheat is on the Montana Supreme Court. He's one of the justices there. That's one of our people that took a job out of state and became somebody really important. Now, that could have been here.
Yes.
Okay, now Dave. Dave graduated from Idaho State. He got a master's and educational specialist in Idaho, and he became a principal for the Marsh Valley School District. He was in several of the schools there, and he was 20 years there or something like, or 30 years there. He still lives up there. But Pandora was a dental assistant, and she worked in Pocatello. Those are local people that could be here. But no, we don't, can't afford to give anybody an education, so there they go. You know, it's an investment, and we don't do it. You know, like you go to Oregon there, and there's the University of Oregon, there's Oregon State, there's Portland State, but then there's Western Oregon, where I went to school. It was called Oregon College of Education then. Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon. So that's, you know, colleges for state-supported colleges for the people. And they don't have to run all over the country recruiting. You know, because they called the recruiting, the placement office at my school, and she gave me my name. And so that's how I got my job there.
Oh, wow.
Through the placement office. They didn't run around and recruit. So there's another thing we could do if we would invest in higher education. But that's my opinion.
You mentioned the Red Bricks. Can you tell me about
that? Okay. You see, when I first came to Henderson, it was the townside area, and there was the Victory Village in Carver Park. Are you familiar with Carver Park?
A little bit, yes.
Okay. Carver Park's been gone for a long time. Originally, back before the Brown versus Board of Education, you're familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay. Carver Park was sort of the segregated part of the town. And when they're building, you know, for World War II, when they built those plants, they moved the African American workers lived out there. And there was a store out there, and there was a school out there, a little four or five room building. But, you know, when the war ended, then there's more integration in the town. But right about that 53, 54, 55, that's when they added what I told you earlier was track one.
Yes.
The triangle and those stucco houses. Then track two came along before I was in school. Track two was being built. And at the edge of town, the town kind of ended up there with Basic Road. Okay. They started to build some municipal buildings. And up there, Lead Street, you know where Lead Street and Basic Road come together?
Yes.
Now you go right across the street there. There's the, I think it's just a recreation building was the new one there. And the pool. But they were built out of these red bricks. The Henderson Pool and the Recreation Center. Now, the high school was built. The high school opened. They built the new high school because the original basic high school was right down there in the city center. All the school buildings were there. And they opened that in January of 54. Now, it was my understanding. I was talking to a guy here the other night, and he was saying he was in that class, the class of 54. They started out the fall of 53 at the old town site area where the school was, and then in January, when they came back from Christmas break, 54, they went to the new high school, and that was a red brick high school. And those started to become the buildings that kind of defined the lives of a generation of us there. Because in the summer, you'd go to the pool. Every kid in town was at the pool, you know, on summer days. It was just amazing, just zillions of us. And I look back and I wonder, was it really that many kids? I mean, but it seemed like there was an awful lot of kids at that pool. And we're all swimming and playing tag, and the lifeguards blowing the whistle and putting us on the bench if we were running or violating the rules.
So you were a troublemaker.
Well, it was kind of a thing with all a lot of the kids. You know, it was kind of a game they had. And then the other one, the youth center. On days you didn't go to the pool, you'd go to the youth center. Now, originally, they had the pool tables over there and a couple of ping pong tables. Now, to play pool, you had to be as tall as the queue or they wouldn't let you play. But they had kind of a gymnasium in there, and they really didn't do much with it. They put baskets in it my sophomore or junior year of high school, somewhere around there. They put baskets in it, and you were able to play basketball there. But originally, they had a plastic ball and bat, and so we'd play wiffle ball indoors in the youth center, and we'd go up there and spend hours doing that until we got old enough to go in and play pool. And the guy who ran the there's a guy named Dalby Shirley who ran the youth center. I think he was in charge of the whole complex, mm-hmm. the pool and the youth center. He was a boxing referee for some major fights, I guess, that happened here in Vegas, or a scorer or one of those things. I know he was big in the fight game. But he hired this guy. His name was Charles Swift. Now, the Swift family's been around here forever. As a matter of fact, one of the families that grew up next door to me was the Swift family. There's a guy named, Chuck Swift is what I knew him as. Chucky, we all called him. But anyway, I think that this guy was his grandfather, and they called him Pappy. Everybody knew him as Pappy Swift. And I was in my 30s, and I was home one Christmas, and I ran into him. And he was in his 90s then. Because he really seemed old to us then. I mean, if I sit back and think about it now, it doesn't seem like that long. He might not have been that old, but he's the guy who ran the youth center.
Okay.
And he kept us playing and kept it in order. And he'd sit there and play pool, or sometimes he'd be playing pool with somebody. And we'd sit in there on the bench, and he'd go into some of the stories about his childhood and things like that, you know, which was obviously someplace else. Because, you know, when I talk about the red brick generation, there's only one generation. Because our parents came from someplace else. By the time our kids came of age, it was gone. I mean, it was still here, but it was a different town. And then the fourth of the red brick buildings is, and it still stands. If you go, you know where those two buildings I referred to as the youth center and the pool. All right, now as you go down Basic Road, there's a little off-road. I can't tell you what the name of it is, but it'll run you right into Macaw. Now, there's a church there, a Lutheran church. That was one of the red brick buildings, too.
Oh, wow.
From what I understand, it was the same contractor who did all four of them. And then when they remodeled the high school in, I guess the whole school year of the 62-63 school year, they were remodeling the high school because they were going to make it a four-year high school. When I went into junior high, Henderson Junior High at the time, was at the old, which is now the city center. We had three classes, 7th, 8th, and 9th. And it was crowded. I mean, there's zillions of kids all the time. And after that year, the 9th grade went up to the high school to become the sophomores. And the 8th grade went up to become the first freshman class at the new building since like 53 or 54, somewhere back in early 50s. And when the next year we went up as the first freshman class to go up by ourselves.
Oh, wow.
And in that class that went up there in 9th grade, you know, the 9th grade class when I was in 7th grade that became the sophomore class the next year. One of the guys in that class was a guy named James Gibson. He's his father is who this library is named after. And, of course, Les Charles. You ever heard of him?
I don't think so.
Glenn and Les Charles? You ever watch the TV series Cheers?
No.
They were the writers of Cheers.
Okay.
They were, again, we didn't have college opportunities. They went to school in L.A., and they were teaching school down there, and they were writing these scripts. Let's see what we can do. And they finally got through, and they did a MASH episode. You ever watch the MASH series?
I did.
The one where Hawkeye was, they told Hawkeye's parents that he was dead.
Hawkeye's, oh, yeah.
They wrote that one.
Oh, wow.
And there was a couple other ones that they wrote. And then they got their own TV series. And so now they're local legends. Again, talent we could have had that went to school someplace else, and we don't have them anymore.
If only.
Well, yeah. Of course, I don't know how many jobs for screenwriters we have here, but, you know, it's just an example of the brain drain that we have. But anyway, he was in that class, among others. You know, I'm just kind of rambling here. But I can remember my dad, he came out here in the summer of 49. My mom was from Kalliani. You know where that is?
I do.
All right. She was from Kalliani. They came there, her father came there in 1915 with her grandfather when they bought a ranch. Okay, and her father became, my grandfather became sheriff of Lincoln County. Well, my dad's from Southern Ohio. Now, how in the heck did a guy from Southern Ohio and a lady from Southern Nevada get together? And they met in Colorado, of course. Well, how's that work? Well, the war was going on. They graduated from the same year of high school, 42, I believe it was. And my mom went to college in at University of Colorado in Boulder, got in the nursing program, and they sent her to Denver to a nursing school, and that's where she was working. And my dad, he went in the Army, the Air Force, the 8th Air Force, and they were out in Denver training. Well, one of the guys on his crew knew one of the nurses in Mom's little group. And so they called up and said, hey, can you set my friend up? So his girlfriend set my friend up with this other lady. Well, this other lady at the last minute backed out. So Mom stepped in, and there we go. So when the war was over, Dad came out and saw Mom in Colorado. And then he went back to Ohio. And then their correspondence, they decided to get married. She told me the story. He said, we'll get married if you do it right now. So she jumped on the train and went to Ohio.
Oh, wow.
And he got out in December of 45, and they were married in February of 46. And he was trying to get several jobs around there. She was, as far as she was concerned, she was living in Ohio. And Dad was working in a cement factory where they were bagging cement, and hurt his back. And she was saying, you shouldn't be doing this. You got the GI Bill. Why don't you go to college? So they went up to Ohio State in Columbus. And Dad finished in 2.5 years. And it was right there towards the end of his 2.5 years when Mom decided she'd go back to Colorado and finish up her nursing degree. And then, of course, she got a chance to go home, see her parents and everything. And there's these newspaper articles I was reading about them having a little get-together for her. But anyway, they went back to Ohio, and Dad graduated in December, and he got a job in someplace in Virginia. I can't tell you where. But anyway, he finished out the school year. He applied to all 88 counties in Ohio and several of the school districts around in Virginia, and he wasn't getting any results. So Mom got a hold of her dad. Like I told you, he was the sheriff of Lincoln County at one time. One of the guys was on the school board down here in Las Vegas. That was before they became Clark County School District. And he talked to him, and so Dad got a job. So here they are in the August of 1949, Dad and my pregnant mother with me coming across the country, and come to Las Vegas. And Dad taught at the old Fifth Street School. Here's an interesting little sidelight on that. I got a Facebook question from somebody who had had him as a teacher in the 40s. Are you the Mr. Smalley that was a teacher in the 40s? That was my dad. If you had him as a teacher in the 40s, you're older than I am. But Dad came to, finally got a job in Henderson, I think, fall of 52, I think it was. You know, they're looking for a place, and they came out to Henderson. Henderson was doing something, trying to move these people, you know, move these houses. But, you know, after World War II, there's a huge housing shortage.
Yes.
And that's when, but Mom got us into that place on Wyoming Street. And that's where we were for almost 40 years.
Oh, my goodness.
But Dad got out in Henderson in, I think, 52. That's when he got the job there. And so he would walk to school, because from that house on Wyoming Street to the school is a real short walk. Seemed like a long walk to me when I was a kid, but it was a real short walk. And I remember he would come home at lunch, and then he'd go back to school, and Mom put me down for a nap. Well, I got up one afternoon there after the nap, and I was going to go see where Dad was, because I'd driven by the school a couple times, and I knew where it was. And I walked up to the school, and I remember walking up there, and there was people everywhere. I was just a little kid, and I was scared. And this little girl comes up to me and says, "Are you lost, little boy?" And I had no idea. "I want to find my daddy."
Aww.
And passed me around to a couple of people. Next thing I knew, here comes Mom, and she's breathing fire. "What are you doing up here?" Because I guess, oh, that's Jim's kid, and called home. And but I remember how intimidated I was. And I was kind of intimidated by that school until I got older. But everything was in such easy walking distance. The downtown, you know, everybody talks about Water Street.
Yes.
They don't remember that the downtown originally was Market Street. Do you even know where Market Street is?
No, I can't tell you.
It's one street over from Water Street.
Really?
Yeah. It ran between Pacific and Atlantic. And it ended at the school, only the school's gone now. Now, the Eldorado moved out and took over part of Market Street. But anyway, on Market Street, we had Foodland and Prime Meats. That was our two grocery stores. And there were several shops. You know, Prime Meats, or Foodland almost had a shopping center. It was Foodland and several different stores. And then they had the sidewalk that went down like this, because I remember we used to ride our bikes down there and spin around the corner. And then there were businesses around the corner. And I think that is, I think that's Army Street. It goes like this, and then it makes a little jet onto the market, and then goes by what is now the Rainbow, which was Prime Meats then. And over there where the Wells Fargo Bank is, you know, there.
Yes.
Right? That was the post office. An old brick post office that was there. And during Christmas every year, they'd put up a Christmas tree. And the fire department would bring Santa Claus down. And all the kids in town would get in the line to see Santa Claus and go sit on Santa Claus's lap, and he'd give you a candy cane. And all my friends of the neighborhood were up there. And of course, you run into everybody, because you knew everybody from town. You know, everybody was in school with you. And that was one of the big events I remember. But, you know, we could walk to town, walk to the stores. And then, you know where the movie theater was?
I know where the new one, or it's...
No, the old original, no. It was originally called the Victory Theater.
Oh, okay.
And it closed down, and then it came back as the Henderson Theater. And, but anyway, that was, you know, they're off Market Street, and Army Street goes over there. The Eldorado parking garage is down there now. And the old drugstore, you know where that was, don't you?
No.
On the corner of Market and Army Street.
Oh, okay.
Kind of like right across the street from the Rainbow Club.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the drugstore, Rexall Drug. It was there for years. And then you go down Army Street, and there's several other little stores there. I don't know if you're here the other night, the guy was talking about Bill Burns. store. Bill Burns was the mayor of Henderson for a while, and they had that little store there. But then the movie theater was over right there, and I'm trying to think, it's Panama Street that goes down this way, connecting Atlantic and Pacific before Atlantic and Pacific come together or cross each other. But the fire station was up there and the police station, that's all there was. No other police or fire stations in town at the time, it's right there. And then the show house was over there, the big building, the old Victory Theater. And that was another thing. On Saturday afternoons, every kid in town was in there for the matinee. And, you know, of course, going to school with everybody, you knew everybody. And during Christmas, they'd have a big feature there with all the movies and everything. But one of the interesting stories, you know, my dad, he'd go up to the movie on a movie night, and he'd take me with him, you know, and just walk up the street to it, you know, from the bottom of Wyoming up to the Victory Theater. It's not that long of a walk, but at the time it seemed like a long ways. But he'd take me up there, and we'd go walk up there and watch the movies, and I'd eventually nod out during the movie, and he'd have to carry me all the way home. That was one of the stories I remember I talked about him with years later. But that was, see, that their generation, there was no television. They would go to the movies, and all the towns had these movie theaters. Mm-hmm. You know, and you would be, they'd have two features a week. They'd have a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday movie, or a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday movie, and not have a Thursday, and a Friday, Saturday, Sunday with a matinee on Saturday. And that was the entertainment in towns all over the country. You know, Dad's town, Mom's town. And so anyway, that was Dad's idea of a night out. We didn't have a television. I remember our first television we bought was 1955. I was 5 years old and we finally got one. But I remember when the Ortizes moved in, they had one, and I'd go over to their house and watch TV. And so Dad decided it was time to buy a TV. And but anyway, walking uptown was just a standard thing. Now, what we would do is neighborhood kids, you know, we're going to go the Saturday matinee. So we'd get a little money, and it didn't take a lot of money. Like for 35 cents, you could go do all these things. You'd stop. It's Portillo's 2 now. You know where that is? All right, you go up Water Street, and it's right across from the El Dorado. It's kind of an old, unimpressive-looking brick building there. I remember when they built that as the Arctic Circle, and it was built in, 53 or 4, somewhere around there. But anyway, by the time I was old enough to go to the movie, you know, we'd go there, and we'd buy a 10-cent Coke, which was maybe 12 ounces or so. I can't remember, but it seemed like a lot at the time. And the movie was going to start maybe at noon or 1 or something like that. And we'd buy the Coke, and we'd go into the Rexall drugstore, and they had a big lunch counter. Now, are you familiar with the drugstores at the lunch counter?
Yes.
White Cross Drug had one up until just, even into the last decade, I remember them having one. But that was a big feature, it was the old. Anyway, they had the lunch counter and the comic book stand. And so we'd go in there. We'd get the comics, read the comic books, not paying for them, of course, drinking sodas that we bought down at the Polar Queen. And we'd read the comic books until it's time to go to the movie. And we'd go in the movie, and we'd get in the movie and buy popcorn for, you know, that's a 35-cent day there.
What other activities did you do when you were younger?
Well, we used to have, yeah, I remember in, they now call it Heritage Days, but it was Industrial Days. And that was a big deal. Up where the El Dorado is now, there was a lot of vacant lot there. And that's where the carnival would be. And that was a big deal to be able to go to the carnival. And the Industrial Days Parade, a lot of people don't know this, but originally it went down Market Street, which is a lot shorter walk if you compare to today. It was back in the 50s somewhere that eventually went down Water Street. But that was a big deal. And then I told you about the Christmas and Santa yes. Claus and summer at the pool and the youth center. The old gymnasium at the high school, the first high school, was a real cracker box kind of thing. But I remember I went to a basketball game there, so because the high school was playing. And you had to sit in this little bleachers there at the end of the gymnasium, and maybe hold 40 people at the most, maybe. But I went to a game there or so. But when they opened that gymnasium up at what is now Burkholder, that was the town, the big thing for the town, the big auditorium. And we went up to basketball and football games were a big deal. And people went up there to see those games. You know, every kid in town was there when we were playing football. Every kid in town was there when basketball was being played. And that was really, really something. We used to have the Christmas program. Miriam Burkholder, who was the wife of the guy that the school's named after because that was, he was our first superintendent, she directed the elementary kids in a Christmas program in the fourth, fifth, and sixth grades, because sixth grade was still elementary in those days.
Right.
And we had four elementary schools in town. When I reached fourth grade, we had four elementary schools. Town site, which is gone. That's in the old original city center. Mm-hmm. Basic Elementary, which is now Macaw. Park Village, which is now Robert Taylor, and Valley View, which opened when I was in fourth grade. That's now C.T. Sewell. Those were the four elementary schools in town. And we'd pack all the kids up to the high school for the big dress rehearsal, and they'd put us in, you know, fourth, fifth, and sixth graders, and we'd sing in this program. And I remember going there when I was in second grade and third grade, I believe. I can't remember, it's been a while. And we'd watch the performance of the elementary kids and for the Christmas program. And then I was in it in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade myself. So that was a big deal. And Titanium Field, which is kind of over, was over there in this shopping center. It's long gone now. That was where the Little League would play. And in the summers, people would pack in there and watch baseball. And I played, well, I was on Little League teams for a couple of years. And I wasn't very good, I guess. But but I was a member. One of the guys on one of my Little League teams when I was in somewhere between fourth and fifth grade year was Jim Gibson again, old James Gibson's son. I knew James Gibson, by the way. As a matter of fact, they sent a wedding present to my first wedding.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, my dad went to their weddings, a couple of theirs. David was a year older than me, and Jim was 2 years older than me. Dave was a year younger than me, and Jim was 2 years older than me. So I was on teams with them. When I played football at the high school, Jim Gibson was a football player. We used to have the Pop Warner. I guess Pop Warner is what you would call it.
Yes.
But you see, when the high school was downtown, there was a big football field there. And they had bleachers on each side. One side, the bleachers were built into the hill. Now, when they moved to the high school, they took the bleachers on the one side up to the high school to be bleachers, but those white bleachers sat there forever. As long as they had the high school, they had that football field and bleachers well into the 70s.
Oh my goodness.
I think maybe even into the 80s, because I remember I took my kids walking around town with me, and mom and dad still lived down in the town site, and they were little. But it was in the 80s, and we walked around, and I walked a lot of these old places. That was my last trip through the old show house building before they they had it turned into a swap meet or something by then. But they tore that down not long after that. But I remember we'd have our football practices there with the Pop Warner. And it'd be, you'd have 5-6 teams practicing in certain spots on that field. And a lot of kids in town played that. I knew kids from Little League and Pop Warner. And then at that old elementary school, the school in the middle of town, the Townsite School, when I was in third grade, they started building what we called the new gym, because the old cracker box that I was telling you about, that was still there. We turned it into a lunchroom when I was in elementary school. That's where I went to lunch all the time. And even in junior high, we went to through lunch there. But up on the hill, you know, because the school had a hill, you know, there was classroom buildings all over down. Then up the hill, they had the shop. They had the original locker room.
Oh, wow.
The football field, basketball court, tennis courts at the other end, which one of you were saying that you went to the Gibson Library in the other location? That's where it was. They took out those old tennis and basketball courts to put the Gibson Library in there.
Oh, okay.
And then they had a bunch of buildings up there. Well, then they built the new gym. But it wasn't just a gymnasium. It was there was the home ec room and the locker rooms. Arts and crafts was in there. It's been a while. But, you know, I've gone to substitute at K.O. Knutson and Hyde Park Middle Schools.
Okay.
Both those schools were built about the same time that we were using this as Henderson Junior High. And I walk into those gymnasiums there, and it's the same design. And I can see it, and it's like, wow, I'm back in the old junior high gym. But we'd hold the dances up there. And, of course, that was a basketball. You know, a lot of basketball was played there. We played City League basketball up there. We had that one side of bleachers and a stage on the other side. So, and the Henderson Industrial Days Beauty Pageant was held there. And that was something that a lot of us would do, go up to the beauty pageant to see the, you know, the beauty contest. There was girls we knew. And bunch of guys sitting around, you know, making stupid comments. And I remember my sisters were getting old enough to go into that, and my mom says, no. My mom was the term used to be the liberated woman. She said she didn't want her daughters looked at as beauty objects.
Oh, makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, both my youngest sister still lives in town. She taught for, almost 30 years in Clark County School District. And my older sister, the one that was closer to my age.
Yes.
You know, she was 2 years younger than me. The other one's 5 years younger than me. But she was, worked with the Nevada Department of Welfare, Child Protective Service, or Child Service, Child and Family Services, or whatever, you know, and it changed names. But she eventually was a professor at the University of Nevada, but she had cancer, and she eventually passed away while she was working in that capacity. But she was up in the Reno area for a long time. So it wasn't like they were going to be stay-at-home housewives or anything like that. Not that I'm speaking against that, but, you know,
right.
That was my mother's point of view.
Yes.
And both my wives have been, had careers of their own.
Do you remember some of the folklores and stories that people tell in Henderson?
I haven't put any thought into that. I'm not sure. I can't really remember any stories. You know, there was always the story that if you went up and climbed over Black Mountain, there was a old ghost town back there. which we all know is true now because you can drive behind the place. You know, there's housing development there and everything.
Oh, yes.
I do remember, you know, I told you about my friend Dave Wheat.
Yes.
Well, when I was old enough to drive, Dad bought a pickup. And I drove that pickup. He and I would go driving around town. Well, you know, we'd go up to Pacific Avenue. And this is before that freeway was in there, the interstate. Mm-hmm. 95, I guess, is what it is now. But you drive up Pacific and keep going. It turned into a dirt road. Actually, Pacific there between Horizon and the railroad track was a dirt road until after my senior year of high school when I was with the county road department when we paved it. But anyway, it was just an old dirt road, and we kept driving one day, and we drove. We went out behind Black Mountain there, and eventually we came out down on that road by Searchlight, and then we came back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that was our exploration that night. It was a lot smaller then than it is now. I know we used to wander out in the desert all the time. That was a big thing. There was a family that lived up the alley. You know, down in the old townside area, they have the alleys.
Yes.
You're familiar with those. Yeah, that was, I haven't really seen those any other place. But up the alley on the side of the Atlantic Street was a family called the Englishes. And I guess they'd been here. I guess his dad originally came not long after the plant was opened under Titanium. His dad worked for Titanium till he retired. Now, Ron got a job in the summer of 69 after we graduated from high school. He tried to go to NSU, which became UNLV. And then at that summer, he got a job working at the plant, and he's still there.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But there were four boys and a girl, the English brothers. Now, Ron was born in March of 1950, so I don't ever remember not knowing Ron, because I remember they'd come down and be wearing their diapers, and they'd go down the alley, and they'd go out, and there's chunks of desert there by the, you know, between the two lanes of Boulder Highway. Now, I don't know if you know this, but there used to be an underpass that went under Boulder Highway that you could walk under.
Oh, wow.
Those have been gone for forever. But they were there. Then a flood came in the 50s sometime, kind of filled them in. But people would walk from the town, walk under those, and you'd get into Victory Village. But anyway, you go over there on the other side of the highway, and there was desert everywhere. And what they now call Morrell Park, that was out in the desert.
Oh, okay. I know where
it is. We used to call it the New Park because there was a park in Victory Village. And so what is now Morrell Park was the New Park. And I remember him building that. But the English brothers would go out there and they'd catch lizards and snakes. And they always had these boxes, a big, because the furniture and appliance stores are always throwing these boxes away. They're big boxes. And if you're quick enough to get by, you could get one of those, and they make great toys. You could we all played in them, but they'd have dirt in them, and they'd put snakes and lizards, and you know, it was a boy's household there.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, well, I knew those guys all my life. So, but anyway, those are some of the things wandering around the desert. And then when the water district, you know, when the city was built and they built the water plant, mm-hmm. which is right there, the head of ocean and water, and then of course, you know, ocean crosses water and goes up, at the time became just a dirt road up there. And there was nothing up there after that, you know, when you got up that far. But that's where the water supply was, hence the term Water Street, because the street went up to the water tank. That was even before Track 2 was built, but Track 2 was built shortly after that, and water went on into it. But the water would come down it through a wash, and out there by the bowling alley, you familiar with the bowling alley over there off of Boulder Highway and Major?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. In between Major and the bowling alley was a wash, as the water would be purged from the water system up there. I'd come down there and every night there'd grow those tamarisk bushes and all that other stuff. And we'd play up there. One of my friends called it Whitewash. And that was one of the places where we'd go up and play. And of course the big concrete conduit that went back there, we'd play in there, but we didn't want to get in there too far. We didn't know what we were going to find.
Can you tell me about the early politics in Henderson?
Well, Bill Burns, I told you about his, he was the mayor. That's one of the first mayors I remember. And there's a guy named French. He was a councilman. And that's what I remember. Jim Gibson, he was elected into the assembly when I was in second grade, I think. I remember, you know, the triangle over there where it comes into Boulder Highway. There, that used to be the Dodge dealership.
Okay.
And there's the building is still there. But, you know, they had a political rally there one time, and I met this guy. I was, 8 years old? I met this guy who was running for Senate. His name was Alan Bible. You ever heard of him?
Roughly.
Yeah, he was a senator for a lot of years from Nevada. He knew my grandfather, but I remember meeting him there. And then I remember one morning, my mom went to school with a guy named Ralph Denton up there in Kalliani. He lived in Boulder City, and he was an attorney for years. Well, he came over one morning with this guy he wanted my parents to meet. And they were sitting there talking, and I went out there. And that guy that they wanted to meet was running for governor. His name was Grant Sawyer. So I met Grant Sawyer. And I remember running around town passing out handbills for Grant Sawyer. Mom gave me and a couple of my friends a dollar for passing out handbills. Those are some of the things I remember. My dad ran for the assembly. I was gone. I was in the Navy. And it was the election of 1970 where he ran for assembly here in Henderson. And he won. Of course, I was over in Vietnam and they tried to send me a telegram. They couldn't get it because I don't know what happened. It wasn't as easy as just, hey, here's an email. Your dad won the election.
Right.
But they sent me a letter saying that dad won. And I was happy to hear that. And then the next year I was out of the Navy and I was home for a while in the summer of 72, and I helped Dad campaign, and he won a second term. And then for the 74 campaign, I wasn't here. I was kind of got my life up in Oregon at the time. But that's when he lost, was the 74 campaign. A guy named Maury Zenoff, he was the publisher of the Henderson Home News, and he kind of wrote an cheap shot article about Dad. You know, Dad was always saying this over and over again. He says, I'm going to be known as an honest politician. I'm not going to fix a ticket for anybody. And any time they'd give him campaign contributions, he says, you know, all this entitles you to is good, honest government. Oh, that's what we want. But, you know, he was a politician that couldn't be bought.
Yes.
So, no, we can't have that. So they go buy his opponent. And you know, if I've learned one thing over the years, yeah, that's one thing, but there's that politically correct thing you have to do. I know when I was umpiring softball, I got myself in trouble time and time again because I wouldn't make the politically correct call. I was making the correct call. Now, if it's the team that's putting the tournament on and it's a close call and it goes against them, they get mad at you and they hate you for the rest of your life and attack your...
Oh, yes.
You know, it's not fair, but that's the way it is.
Oh, yes.
You know, and it's one of the bones in my head when I was teaching is all the students are the same. There is no variation for you because your dad's on the school board. Well, now, I could feel that way. Maybe the parent would even feel that way, but when the parent got upset, then now they talk to the principal, and of course the principal's... Yes, sir, whatever you want. You know, but you know, those are other issues. But, I first really started my political awareness here in this town. And like I said, Dad was there. We were Democrats. And I still am. And that kind of gets me into some arguments with people. But now that I'm a retired teacher, I don't really have to bend to political wills or anything like that.
Of course.
What's that?
I said, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike O'Callaghan. You know who he is.
I've heard the name.
O'Callaghan Middle School. He was governor of the state of Nevada. Well, he ran for governor. He taught at the high school here.
Okay.
Well, just after we got in the red brick building. And he was there for a couple of years and then went someplace. But then he ran for governor. And he was the governor when Dad was in the assembly.
Okay.
And I remember whenever I'd see Mike O'Callaghan, I'd shake hands. He knew who I was, and I'd shake hands with him even into the last year of his life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a real personable guy. You don't get to know the governor of a state like that any place but Nevada in those days.
Right.
It's probably not the same now.
I doubt it.
But, you know, the school district was a pretty political place. It always has been, always will be.
Of course.
And Dad knew all the people, and they knew him. You know, it took a while to get that school named after him. My youngest sister made the attempt to try to get a school named after him, because it was both of them, because Mom was a school nurse for a long time. She had she helped establish the first nursery school here in town, that old youth center that I told you about.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they were starting to take preschool kids up there and spend some time with them. Doris Reed Elementary, you've heard of that?
Yes.
Okay. Doris Reed came from England after the war. Her and her three kids. And of course, since she didn't have her green card, she ran a nursery school. And I was one of the students in that nursery school. Another one of the students in that nursery school was a guy by the name of Les Charles. Excuse me. But among others, you know, there's just a bunch of us. And it was over on, let's see, where's my bearings? Back up there would be, you know, Manganese swings around like this?
Yes.
Okay. It was over on Manganese. And I think it was the last building taken before the two that are still standing.
Okay.
And that's where she had her nursery school at one time. Now, my uncle, who's only 9 years older than me, he was staying with us one time. Mom had to work and Dad had to work. And so he put us in the wagon and pulled us across town to the nursery school. And we still talk about that every now and then. Not that I ever remember it, but Mom told the story about that. But then Doris got a house up on Basic Road or Tungsten, one of the two. I recognized the house right away if I saw it. But
oh, okay.
And she started holding nursery school there. And then, of course, she got her green card and she got on at the junior high. Yeah, she lived in well into her 90s.
What kind of things happened in Henderson that didn't happen anywhere else?
Well, like I told you, the one generation. You won't see that where a town is only one way for one generation. You know, the parents, they came from someplace else. And like I said, by the time our kids came along, it was a different town. So the one generation of the red brick era, I guess. But the growth, I remember how it just kept growing and growing and growing. And old dirt roads and trails all of a sudden became roads. Like the high school, the old red brick school, now Burkholder. You know that gym's still up there?
Yes.
That's the only part left. And they made it a lunchroom. I substituted up there one time. I couldn't believe it. I walked into the gym and I go, the lunchroom? This is the gym. This is where the cultural center of the town. But that was that school just really started to grow. But, you know, originally, and I can remember for years, we'd go out to the high school and that road, you know, you'd go up Pacific, and then what is Van Wagon, you know, Pacific at end, mm-hmm. and then you'd go out there on a dirt road, is what eventually became Van Wagon, and drive right into the high school. That's where it ended. There was nothing else out there. You know, they built a housing development over there. They called Hillcrest. I don't know if they still refer to it that way.
Not sure.
Well, you know where Burkholder baseball field is?
Yes.
Okay. Now there's a housing development right down there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But the only way you could get to it was to go down the BMP Road was the other. Part of it was Frontier Highway and the other part was BMP Road. It's now Lake Mead Drive. Okay. But you'd have to go out on Frontier Highway, and then there was a lumber company there on the corner of what is now Van Wagenen and Lake Mead. Then there was a road on the other side of the lumber company there, and that road would take you back into Hillcrest. That was the only access. Other than that, you know, it was out there isolated. Now, the high school with the football field there was a road that went over to the other side, and you could drive through kind of through the desert to it. But it was kind of isolated. But that community over there, that's how you got in, because there was no Van Wagenen.
Right.
Now, as I was in school, they put Van Wagenen in, but it only went to Victory Road. And, you know, that's another thing about the town, you know, you can tell how it was the war, Victory Road.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get into the interior of the town, you know, there's Atomic Street, Marine Street, Army Street, Navy Street.
Yes.
And the theater was originally the Victory Theater. And did I mention Victory Village?
Yes.
Yeah, that was. But that's, I don't know, that was kind of a watching it grow. And then to see them totally obliterate Victory Village and Carver Park. Because I can walk over there and the slabs are still there. And I can look around and kind of somewhat envision where it was. But I remember Park Village Elementary, Robert Taylor now, on the other side of Victory Village.
Okay.
And you couldn't see it from Boulder Highway. And Boulder Highway was pretty empty, too. You had St. Peter's there. St. Peter's was a school in town, too, went K through 8. A lot of people I know, a lot of the guys in my neighborhood, went to St. Peter's. They go to St. Peter's and they go to town site. Back and forth. A lot of people did that. But after eighth grade, for ninth grade, they went to school in Henderson.
Okay.
One of my best friends, Mike Tharp, went first through eighth at St. Peter's. And I didn't even know him until he got to high school. We became friends after high school. I can name a lot of people who went through that era with me. Guy named Stu Barquist, he's back in town now. He's not doing too well, but his grandmother lived down on the corner of Texas and Pacific. And so Stuart was always spending time over there. So I don't ever remember not knowing Stu. And then he moved to Oregon several years after I did. And he lived in Oregon for a while. And we'd see each other up there, and then we'd see each other down here. He's still one of my best friends. I'll go get him and take him to something every now and then. Those are some of the guys that I grew up with.
Is there anything else you would like to share about your experience in Henderson?
Oh, I'm sure I could ramble for quite a while, but, you know, that particular era. One thing I remember, Henderson didn't have a graveyard.
No.
Until I think it was 64 that they built Palm Mortuary.
Oh my gosh.
And the graveyard. And of course, you know, now it's a fixture.
Yes.
But for years, you know, they'd bury them. You know, they're in Las Vegas over by Rancho High School. Well, they had that the graveyard there.
Okay.
That's where, from what I understand, I could be wrong, that was the old, on the Helen J. Stewart Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was started by burying their family there.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong, but it seemed like that's what I'd heard. And I read that book on Helen J. Stewart and the development of Las Vegas. But I'm trying to think of some of the other stuff that we did here. It is a unique town in that the history is so short and the growth was so incredible. Just to see that much growth happening.
Oh, I bet.
And, you know, seeing them build, well, like when I started school, well, I guess there was those three elementary, I remember those two elementary schools being built, you know, Park Village, which is now Robert Taylor, and Basic mm-hmm. Elementary, which is now McCaw. And Townsite, that was the name of the school. You know, I tell people, yeah, I went to Townsite Elementary. Where's that? It's gone. As a matter of fact, the only building out of all the buildings I went to school in this town, the only building still standing is that gym up at Burkholder. None of the other buildings are standing. They're all gone.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But I can remember what an event the high school football and basketball games were. And the Titanium Field Little League games. And the afternoons at the pool.
It sounds like you had a good life.
Well, I might have been able to do better, but I certainly know I could have done a whole heck of a lot worse. But, you know, I share as much history of this town as I can. I mean, you got my ramblings here. You can put them together. You know, I thought about writing a book about the red brick era. Because if you ask a lot of people my age, that kind of defines our era.
Right.
Because a lot of hours of my life were in those buildings. And a lot of other kids' lives, too. If you count being out in the pool as being in the building.
I won't tell anyone. All right, that concludes our interview.